why can't I do this? Why am I always forgetting things? Why am I always losing things? Why am I late on projects? Why do I procrastinate? And it's a really beautiful thing when someone does get a diagnosis and we're able to help them with that, because then they realize it wasn't their fault, right? This was just a symptom of how their brain was working at the time. And we can help these things with natural interventions.
Welcome to Discovering Nutrition with Chronometer. I am your host and community marketing manager, Elisa. And today I am very excited to sit down with special guest and familiar face, Dr. Kate Kresge. Dr. Kresge is the head of medical education at Rupa Health and the host of the Root Cause Medicine podcast. Dr. Kate is passionate about teaching people to use food as medicine, advanced laboratory testing, and cutting-edge intervention to find and heal the root cause of chronic health disorders, including mental health disorders, so people can truly thrive. In this episode, we sit down with Dr. Kresge to discuss the connection between nutrition, lifestyle, and mental health disorders like ADHD. As always, this podcast is for general purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including getting medical advice. The use of information from this podcast is at the user's own risk and is not to be substituted for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. I learned a ton about ADHD and mental health and diet in general, and I can't wait to share this episode with you. So today we have a special guest. We've known each other for a little while for sure. Avid Chronometer user. Could you please introduce yourself and give us a little bit of background about who you are and what you do?
Love it. Hi guys. Yeah, my name is Dr. Kate Kresge. So I'm the head of medical education at Rupa Health. I have been using Chronometer for probably over a decade, I would say. Like, I started as a personal user, really fell in love with this tool for myself and my own health, and involved it heavily in the practice that I built where we were treating people with mental health disorders and helping them heal with food. And I've been so passionate about Chronometer as I've been in practice, because I think a lot of doctors talk about food as medicine, but we don't talk about what you're getting from your diet. So you end up leaving the doctor's office with a list of foods to eat and a list of supplements to take, and no one has really done the work to figure out what are you already getting and what are you likely deficient in. And so I'm really thrilled, because I think that Chronometer is a tool that needs to be involved in the very beginning of care for most people as they try to heal from a mental health disorder. And today I'm here to talk about ADHD. It's one of the most fun topics to talk about, in my opinion. You can make a ton of difference in the lives of people with ADHD using food, and in particular, teaching them to use Chronometer to fill gaps that are really important for them and their attention.
So I feel like in my generation, I'm a millennial, that ADHD obviously was around, but maybe not diagnosed as much. And this is a term that we're hearing a lot more lately, in particular as it pertains to children. Could you just give us a brief overview of what ADHD actually is? And
absolutely,
how it gets diagnosed?
It's a great question, because I think attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, there's a couple key things to point out before we go into the specific symptoms. One is that it can be either inattentive predominant type or hyperactive predominant type. It can also be a combination of both. And so you don't need to have the hyperactivity to be diagnosed. And I think that's what trips up a lot of people. So in order to diagnose someone with ADHD, they have to have some of the following symptoms. And these symptoms have to be present in at least two settings, which means it can't just be like at school or at home. These symptoms need to kind of come up wherever you go. And again, they need to have been around for more than 6 months. So the first are inattentive symptoms. And if you've already checked out of this podcast, this might be you.
If you have, then maybe go consult a healthcare practitioner.
Right.
That's amazing.
So we give like examples of these symptoms, like failing to pay close attention to detail, making careless mistakes on schoolwork and homework. This can be something like you didn't read the directions, you forgot there was a back page of the test, or like you didn't realize, and so you failed even though you knew the material. You always forgot to put your name on your stuff when you would hand things in. You forgot the date that something was due. So even though you knew the material, you ended up suffering in school. Another one is having difficulty sustaining attention, particularly during things that require focused attention or that are not highly stimulating. So a lot of people will get this mixed up because they'll say, my kid can sit and play video games for 6 hours, mm-hmm. right? But they can't sit down and pay attention for 20 minutes in a math lesson. Well, that is a symptom, and we can get into why. Another thing is that they don't seem to listen when they're spoken to directly. So if you're someone who does this, you might hear from your partner or your parents that you seem to not be listening, even though you feel like you're listening. You might be thinking about three things at once and multitasking, but it may often be reflect to you that you don't seem to listen. Not following through on instructions or failing to finish schoolwork and homework, chores, things that are important for your job, having difficulty organizing tasks. So your frontal lobe is responsible for helping you remember to do long-term planning. Things like my car registration is about to expire. That means that I have to do 3 steps in the next 3 months to prevent that from happening. Your frontal lobe needs dopamine to work appropriately and to really help you do those tasks. When you have ADHD, that is impaired. And so this is the kind of thing that you'll see people with ADHD forgetting to do as adults. There's more symptoms we can go through, like avoiding tasks that do demand attention. So a lot of procrastination can be seen with this group, often losing things, easily extracted by extraneous stimuli, and then just like seeming forgetful. And so what's interesting with these inattentive symptoms is a lot of people who have them feel a lot of shame. Like there can be a lot of self-criticism and feeling like, why can't I do this? Why am I always forgetting things? Why am I always losing things? Why am I late on projects? Why do I procrastinate? And it's a really beautiful thing when someone does get a diagnosis and we're able to help them with that, because then they realize it wasn't their fault, right? This was just a symptom of how their brain was working at the time. And we can help these things with natural interventions.
I feel like
that's one half.
I feel mm-hmm. just to touch on that. I feel like when I was reading through the blog article, and we'll absolutely link to that in the show notes, that you wrote on this, I was like, how do you differentiate between ordinary forgetfulness? You know, it's like you forget your keys or you misplace this. Like, I lose everything. I don't think that I have ADHD. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. How do you differentiate between things that are fairly common, I think, and what are actually symptoms?
Yeah. So a psychiatrist will do that. And the key part about this diagnostic criteria we're talking about is it comes from what's called the DSM, which is like a manual that psychiatrists will use to help with diagnosis. And this checklist of symptoms is just one part of it. They do a really holistic assessment that's going to look at the rest of your developmental history, the rest of your life. How are you functioning in the rest of your life? And the key part with these symptoms is that they interfere with normal daily function and activities of daily living. And so if you are somewhat forgetful, but you are not spending an hour a day looking for things, that's different, right? Like if you're spending an hour a day and you lose your key so often you can't get out the door, you're late to work, you get reprimanded at your job, that's a different story than like, you know, occasionally forgetting something. So part of it is the degree of impairment. And what I'll say is we'll talk about the hyperactivity symptoms next. One of the most important things to know about ADHD is that it does cause significant impairment. So we know that people with ADHD earn approximately 30% less over their lifetimes. And there's costs associated with ADHD. You're much more likely to need government assistance. You're more likely to suffer from addiction. Untreated ADHD is not benign. And so I think a lot of times folks with ADHD will even joke about their own symptoms, right? Where they're like, oh, let's forget things, or I'm distracted. Mm-hmm. But truthfully, this disorder really has some serious consequences. And it's why it's so rewarding to treat, because when you help people control the symptoms that are in their way of thriving, they start to feel great and they don't suffer from some of the negative consequences that we see. I mean, there's a lot of debate about, is ADHD, you know, actually abnormal? Or is it our society where we try to force people to sit down for hours a day and pay sustained attention for hours at a time? And I think those are really valid questions. But until regardless of the answer, really, you have to survive in this society, right? Yes. And so being disabled by these symptoms and being at a disadvantage is something we want to help these folks with so that they're not going to earn less than their neurotypical counterparts. The hyperactivity, impulsivity symptoms most people are a little more familiar with because it tends to be the stuff we talk about, which is like somebody fidgeting a ton, they squirm, they can't sit still, they're disruptive, they're impulsive, they interrupt, they're always on the go, acting as if they're like driven by a motor, they talk excessively. There needs to be at least six or more of symptoms like this to be diagnosed with the hyperactive type or impulsive type. But if you think about it, this is more than just like having the wiggles is what we call it in my practice. Like you have too many wiggles. You got to get your exercise and get your wiggles out. It's going to also play a role in your social symptoms. So, or your social interactions. So you might have problems as a kid. If you're always interrupting, you're always butting in, you're always blurting things out. You might have a hard time making friends. That has an impact long-term. So these are all symptoms that we think about with ADHD. There's more of them. But when we're thinking about making a diagnosis, this is some of the things that a psychiatrist will be asking about and looking for.
One of the things that I think is interesting too, obviously we're doing a much better job in schools at recognizing these kinds of things, and we are getting on top of it, which is probably why we're seeing like an uptick in diagnosed cases of ADHD. But when we're talking about people who haven't had that benefit, they've gone through school already, university, they're adults, a lot of people probably, I'm making an assumption here, but are just like, this is just the way that I am, you know, like should people that are suffering from some of the symptoms that you've listed take initiative and go and talk to someone? Like, I feel like we're a much more diligent society now about mental health than we were even 5-10 years ago. So what are the steps that someone who resonated with what you were saying on the symptom list do as an adult? Because obviously children will probably have, I hope, a better level of care than adults who are undiagnosed at this point?
I think it's a great question. So if you're living life and you're like 10 out of 10 happy, life is easy for you, you don't want to know, I totally get that. If life could be better, I think it's worth talking to someone about. And honestly, just as part of a holistic assessment. So if you see a naturopathic doctor or a functional medicine doctor, you can start to talk with them about this. And even without a diagnosis, focusing on some of the things we talk about today will help. So for example, you optimizing your vitamin D status is only going to help your whole person health. And there's evidence it will help with your attentive symptoms. That's one part. The second part of this answer, like I would want to know, and here's why. Adults who make it through school, school might have been really difficult, but they might have made it through and they're just like, I'm now in a career where I work with my hands. I don't need to worry about that stuff anymore. There's a lot of evidence that people with ADHD are more likely to have mood issues, addiction issues, but also something called emotional liability. And women with ADHD are much more likely to suffer from something called PMDD. And so ADHD does not just affect academic performance or job performance. It also affects your relationships. And here's why. The part of our brain that is responsible for fight or flight is called your basal ganglia amygdala. It's the center part of your brain. If you like took your fingers, stuck them in your ears where they meet in the middle, that part is the fight or flight part of your brain. Your frontal lobe, which is right behind your forehead, inhibits activity there. And so when something upsetting happens to you and you would normally react, your frontal lobe helps you turn down the volume on your reaction. When you have ADHD, that process is a bit impaired. And so you may notice that you are more what's called emotionally liable or reactive. That's not great when you're trying to have really solid, healthy relationships. And if you are an ADHD adult and you have children, because this disorder is highly heritable, chances are your kids have ADHD and they might also be pushing your buttons. You need to be incredibly regulated so that you can help model regulation for them. So there's so many reasons to address this disorder, and your options are so much bigger than medication, which is what a lot of people who are adults with ADHD remember. They just remember, I was a kid, I got put on meds, I hated them, I never want to go back to that part of my life. We have so many more options now. You don't have to choose medication, or you could choose medication and then use natural medicine to help you have less side effects. So yeah, I would say starting the conversation, even just with your therapist, your primary care provider, might give you more insight into your own health and may help you control some of the symptoms that are interrupting your ability to live 10 out of 10 in every area, work, relationships. Yeah.
Do you have some numbers for us? Like what is the incidence of ADHD right now in probably the United States, if you have stats there, or globally? We'll take any stats.
It's interesting. So there's a range. So World Health Organization has a stat of around 2% globally, global incidence. In the United States, it's estimated that anywhere between 8 and 11% of children have diagnosable ADHD. And I'm seeing Elisa's face like nodding and her eyes are getting bigger. It's a little bit startling.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. At least 6 million kids, according to the CDC. The way we measure this is different. So no one has gone on every door in the U.S. and knocked and asked if people have ADHD.
Right.
The way we measure this is often with surveys or by looking at diagnostic criteria or by looking at how many people are taking ADHD medications, which is why you see the range. We also try to estimate how many people have been undiagnosed, because there are many people walking around who, for whatever reason, haven't been diagnosed yet, even though we know they likely do have ADHD. So it's not a small number. ADHD is the most common neurodevelopmental disorder in children. And we just talked about how impactful it is. So I think many people might feel like they're hearing a lot about this disorder now and wondering if it's hype or wondering if it's because of technology. Certainly those could be part of it. But the other part of it is a big portion of our population has been diagnosed with this or will be. And so we as a society are really starting to think about, what do we do about that?
I think a lot of it is just screening process is obviously better, and then awareness. But do you think that there are other factors that are contributing to the prevalence now? Like maybe because we have more processed foods, people are cooking at home less. You know, obviously a lot of children are on devices and that kind of thing. Do you think that those things support the development of ADHD as well?
It's so interesting. If I was an epidemiologist, I might feel more confident guessing.
Mm-hmm.
What I can say is I don't know. I think it's very tempting to say, well, everybody's more sedentary and they're on devices, and we know that neuroinflammation is linked with ADHD, so it must be like what we're eating and the fact that we're sitting all the time. And that is logical, but I don't know that that has been proven.
Right.
And I don't know that it will be proven for a long time. And so as somebody who was sitting in a chair, literally like having to just figure out, well, what do I do about it? Right. Every day. It's like, I almost as a clinician don't have like time to really postulate about why it's increasing. I just know it is and to start addressing it. Now, what I'll say is we know that a couple of things increase the risk of having ADHD. One of them is traumatic brain injury. We also know that having high levels of interleukins is associated with ADHD. That doesn't necessarily mean that it causes ADHD, but that's a marker of inflammation in the brain. Most importantly, I think for our conversation today, we know that people with ADHD are more likely to have several nutritional deficiencies that, when we correct them, improve their symptoms. And so I know you guys have talked on the show, and there's been a lot of talk recently about the fact that we're just consuming a bit less of a nutrient-dense diet over the last few decades in our country in particular. And so that could also be part of it. Some of the nutrients that there's evidence for are things like vitamin D, zinc, iron, magnesium, B vitamins, and omega-3s. And so we can talk about those six categories today. But Elisa, I know you know Chronometer like the back of your hand. So like you're probably thinking of these going, all right, top source of omega-3, flaxseed, chia seed, salmon.
Yes.
Who's eating those every day?
Not many people, hopefully more, but not many actually. I even though I've worked here for almost 6 years, I was woefully low in omegas until I did a podcast on hydration and learned about chia seeds and how they are really good for hydration as well as omegas. And now I put them in a protein bowl, but I don't think that most people are consuming those readily. It's just one of those things, like, how do you even consume those? And then there's the flip side of things always, you know, like overconsumption of canned seafood and mercury. And it's just, we have so much conflicting information. It's really hard to know, I think, what's right. But that's why I love having professionals on like yourself. I think it's great to debunk some things. And obviously at Chronometer, we really subscribe to like holistic nutrition, which I know that you do too. And that's why this partnership is such a beautiful thing, because we also believe that food is medicine and can heal things like this. So in that vein, could you talk a little bit more about helping alleviate symptoms of ADHD with nutrition in particular?
Sure. And before we dive in, let me explain why this matters, I think, in like a really tangible way. So we hear so much about dopamine and adrenaline with ADHD, right? But we rarely stop to ask, how do you make dopamine? And for the people at home, I want you to picture it. If I was like, get me some ingredients and make some dopamine right now, how would you do it? And I'll give you the secret. It's two ingredients.
I hope one of them is exercise. Oh, I'm like actually thinking you're like, you're being a chemist and I'm like, what gives me dopamine? I just went for a run. I feel great.
You can certainly alter the concentration of endorphins and neurotransmitters with activity. Awesome. We will talk about exercise in a minute. Please. I love this. But chemically, like dopamine's a chemical,
yes,
right? It has to be made from something. Mm-hmm. How do you make it? You use two nutrients to make dopamine: tyrosine, which is an amino acid, which comes from protein, and B6.
I didn't know this.
And that's it.
I didn't, and I read a whole book on dopamine called The Molecule of More, and I did not know that. So that is awesome. I learned something new today.
Right? So simple, but guess what the number one nutrient deficiency in the U.S. is, according to the CDC?
I don't know. Obviously, one of those, but
B6.
Pardon?
Vitamin B6 affects 11% of our population is deficient.
Really? I would have thought it was magnesium or something along those lines. So, also learning a lot. That's amazing.
If you're in the U.S., which like I realize you guys are not based in the U.S.,
Canada.
But, you know, we're just like, yeah, we're neighbors. So I figure yes, we might be similar.
I would in assume. The US,
yeah. In the U.S., our tax dollars pay for something called the NHANES study, which is the National Health and Nutrition Survey. And it's done in partnership with like the NIH and the CDC. And they survey the U.S. population. And they figure out what are the biggest nutrient deficiencies. And the reason they do that is for a number of reasons, but one is to determine what do we have to put in the food supply as fortification.
Yes.
Yes. So we did this decades ago when we found out like so many people were getting goiter and hypothyroidism. This was back in the 50s. Mm-hmm. And it was because we didn't have enough iodine in our soils. Mm-hmm. And so that's when you started seeing iodized salt pop up in the store. So the government keeps track of this. And so the most recent NHANES study, and I can get you this link, they published the top 10 nutrient deficiencies affecting the U.S. population, and B6 was number one. Yeah, and then it was iron. Vitamin D was also on there. B12 and folate were also on there. I think if we adjusted the amount of magnesium we think people need, like the RDA, mm-hmm, magnesium might also pop up, because number one source of magnesium is pumpkin seeds, and I have not met a single person yet who is eating enough pumpkin seeds every day to get enough magnesium. But are we surprised that we're seeing an increase in what's arguably a dopaminergic disorder, right? ADHD, depression, mm-hmm, when 11% of our population is deficient in 50% of the materials they need to make that neurotransmitter? Like, I'm not surprised by that. So that's when people are asking, why is it increasing? Are we surprised? Like, no. Mm-hmm. If we could get that number down to 1%, maybe we'd see some of these disorders reduce, right? Because you literally cannot make dopamine without those two ingredients. So that's why I'm so passionate about looking at food first, because with Chronometer, you can put someone's week into Chronometer and you can see how much B6 are they getting. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, you can show them. And what's beautiful is when people see that they're getting 10% of the B6 they need, they go, what do I have to do to fix it?
Yes.
And that's when you can start having the conversation about their options. You can say, well, you can get more garbanzo beans. Those are the number one source of B6. Or you could take a supplement. Or you could get these other 10 foods and kind of get them in combination. And so what we would do in my practice is build people a meal plan that got them to 100% of every single nutrient every day. It was very difficult. That's the reason I think, Elisa, you and I can confidently say, like, probably people aren't getting enough, because when you actually try to get all the nutrients,
it's so hard. Our Reddit community is like, does anyone have a template for what 100% day looks like? And I'm like, I've used the app for, like I said, 6 years religiously. And I think I've maybe hit 100 like one day, honestly. Like, if I'm being completely honest, it's so hard. And with a Western diet to get everything without supplementation, for me anyway. I know some people are out there just absolutely crushing it, but I'm someone who also likes eating for pleasure. So very difficult.
I had one RD who did that with just food. Like, she had been doing it for years, but everyone else, like, if you're not willing to eat beef liver and you're not willing to eat cod liver oil, it's going to be really hard for you to get a lot of these nutrients at 100% daily value that you need every single day. And it's okay if you don't want to, but then you just have to take supplements, right? Or figure out a different way. But yeah.
I love because I'm going to get off this podcast and I'm going to look at my B6 intake. I mean, I am paying attention to my micronutrient consumption, but I didn't know that. And now I'm going to pay extra attention. And I think that that's like the primary reason I love my job, is whenever someone teaches me something new that I action, because I really do listen to what people who know more than me say, especially when it comes to nutrition. Then I'll, like, I started drinking a lot more water, paying attention to my electrolytes, focusing on my heart health. Like, everyone that's been on here has taught me something. And so my mind is blown, obviously. You just gave me the recipe for dopamine. I'll never forget it now, but.
It's great, right? This is the type of thing I wish was taught in kindergarten, because it's like the user manual for your body and your brain. Mm-hmm. So what's interesting is, yes, you need tyrosine and B6 to make dopamine, full stop. You should care about that. But actually, we have, I would say, higher levels of evidence for 6 other nutrients being used to actually manage symptoms of ADHD than we do for B6. And before I get into that, I'm going to do a little disclaimer for everybody who's listening. It's really hard to get studies for nutrients funded. A lot, because you can't patent a nutrient. So really easy to get a study on the efficacy of a drug, because the drug company will generally pay for the research, because they're going to make a ton of money if it turns out that that drug is efficacious. You cannot patent B6. You cannot patent vitamin D. And so it's very difficult to get these studies funded. Usually they're funded by the NIH or some kind of government entity through a university. And so a lot of times people start to feel angry when they're like, why didn't I know this stuff about B6? Like, why isn't this more widely known? And part of it is, like, you know, not only is it hard to get the research funded, but then there's no rep being paid to come to your doctor's office to teach them about this.
No, and I think that's such a shortfall of just the medical system in general. I think a lot of the time we have this, like, medication first mentality, you know, like talking to my own physician. I have a wonderful, wonderful physician who understands me so well, and my desire to try to work on things holistically through my diet interventions first. And she welcomes that. But I know I've talked to other physicians, and it's just, they are pushing medication to treat symptoms, which then could have more medication to treat the side effects of these drugs, right? So I think that working on our diets is so important. But I know because I had some very candid conversations. It's just not really even like part of like the curriculum for med students to really learn a lot about nutrition. So that's where, you know, naturopathic doctors like yourself are just, you guys definitely have learned a lot more. And I think that that's a beautiful thing because we haven't had the blueprint to understanding our bodies in the way that we're starting to now. A lot of stuff is still just like guessing and hoping. And I think that it's too bad that we're in that position of not understanding just a basic level what nutrients we need. Like you said, we're not taught this in school. I think it should be. And just more awareness because it's so much more than calories and even macros. These micros are so important as well. So
critical. Yeah, I feel privileged that I had a year of graduate nutrition training in my naturopathic medical education, but I still had to study more when I got out. There's a field called orthomolecular psychiatry or functional psychiatry that is, if anyone is really like into this stuff, you could go read books in that genre, and that will teach you a lot about this. But you're right. And I mean, that's why at Rupa, we're really proud. So we're partnering with you guys to do what's called we're calling it ADHD bootcamp. It's 6 weeks of training for medical professionals, anyone from like a health coach to a doctor, as long as you work with people, where we train you to understand how to screen people for inadequate intake of these nutrients. We're going to talk about using chronometer, how to look at their blood levels, right? So like, how do you do a blood test? Like, okay, maybe they're eating enough or maybe they've never eaten enough, but either way, how do you tell if they're actually deficient? Right. And we train them on the testing. Then we train them on what to do with that information, not only with like food planning and supplements, but then also there's some other interventions you can use like exercise, like herbs, to really help. And the brilliant thing about this is that you can use this alongside medication. This is not an either or conversation.
Yes.
We're actually really privileged in the US and Canada to have access to almost all of the interventions we could want. Mm-hmm. And so it's not about, you know, like what's better or worse. It's just about like what combination works for you. So we are really leaning hard into educating practitioners about this. And I'm really excited to do that because it's hard to get it in school. You're learning so much else. Mm-hmm. Like now's the time. So we need more of us. We have more people than ever. We're diagnosing with ADHD. We have less providers than ever. We have a provider shortage in the US, not only a psychiatry shortage, but also a primary care shortage, which is a lot of people get their care from primary care, even their ADHD medication. So we need more people, including RDs, who understand how to use nutrition to help people with ADHD. So it's exciting. I'm glad we're partnering to do it.
Yeah, that's amazing. People could learn so, so much. And like you said, I'm shocked by the amount of people, like 8 to 11% of people suffer from ADHD. That is a tremendous number. So I think this is very timely. So somebody finds out, you know, like the process here, they've listened to this podcast, they've identified some symptoms, they go and they actually get a formal diagnosis of ADHD. What are the recommendations from your perspective that they could improve upon lifestyle and with nutrition to improve their symptoms?
So there's a couple categories. The first one I'll say, I want to bring it back to what you said earlier about your run making you feel better. Exercise is an incredibly effective therapeutic for ADHD. Something as simple as 5 minutes of jumping jacks, jumping up and down, has been shown to statistically significantly improve test scores in people with ADHD. So jumping up and down for 5 minutes before you sit down and take your test, or like running around and doing something way more fun than jumping. Maybe you're like playing a game or something. And I think we often leave that out of the conversation because you can't really prescribe exercise in a pill. But that doesn't mean it's not super effective. So incorporating some type of exercise before you have to focus is a very easy hack for ADHD. The second is to look at a couple key nutrients: vitamin D, zinc, iron, magnesium, B vitamins, omega-3s. If you focus on those, we know that those can improve outcomes in ADHD. For example, we know that people who optimize their iron intake, even if they're not anemic, when they optimize their iron intake to what they actually need every single day, their ADHD medication works better. We know that when we give people zinc 8 weeks before we start them on ADHD medication, they require less medication to control their symptoms, 37% less medication.
That's a lot. That's a lot.
That's a lot. Mm-hmm. So focusing on those two nutrients alone could do a lot for you mm-hmm. to help control your symptoms and help you require less medication, which generally then means less side effects if you're able to take a lower dose. Top source of zinc is oysters. Mm-hmm. So if you're not about that life, you could consider.
I'm not about that life. That is
A lot of people aren't. It's like beef liver and oysters, man, are like top sources of a lot of nutrients. It's wild.
I'm not down for either, if I'm being totally honest. So maybe a supplement.
Yeah. Love it. I mean, check in chronometer. So those are the two things. Check mm-hmm. in chronometer. Are you getting enough? Mm-hmm. And then check your blood. So with iron, you can run an iron panel, which is a little bit more effective than just checking for iron or just doing a CBC, because it will also check for ferritin, which is a stored form of iron. Ferritin yes. often goes low, like right before you're anemic. So check on those. I like RBC zinc. It checks the amount of zinc in your red blood cells, which is generally an indication of how much zinc has been around in your system for the last 3 months, because your red blood cells live about 3 months in your blood. And see, like, are you low? You should always be checking zinc with copper, because the zinc-copper ratio in your body is important. Zinc and copper compete for absorption. They actually, having too little zinc and too much copper will affect your attention, but having too little copper will also make it hard for you to pay attention, make you really irritable. So paying attention to both is really important. And what I think is really beautiful is that often the top sources of zinc are balanced with copper. So this is the beautiful thing about choosing food as a source of yes. these nutrients, because they generally come like packaged in the right ratios. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to overdo a specific nutrient with food. You could very easily overdo it with a supplement. Caveat, anyone who's listening, do not take a supplement without talking to your healthcare professional. Like, bad idea. Full stop. Like, you store iron, you shouldn't take too much. It can be dangerous for you.
Yes.
Taking too much zinc could be dangerous for you, could cause a copper deficiency. You need to know how much to take. You need to monitor your blood levels. You need to check in with your doctor frequently and find a way to do it that's right for you. Especially with zinc, taking that on an empty stomach can make you very nauseous and even throw up. So I do not recommend doing that. But if you need it and your doctor helps you take it in a way that's convenient and safe for you, it can also help with other things like sleep and anxiety. So you may find – and your immune system. I mean, honestly, zinc is used for so many reactions in the body. Like, we could have a whole episode on zinc.
Let's do it.
Focusing on food improves everything, because we run our biochemistry using nutrients, and there's really only 80 nutrients that make or break human health. So if you get enough of them all, you generally improve a ton of your symptoms and a ton of aspects of your health. Vitamin D is another one. Top source of vitamin D is cod liver oil. If you are not consuming cod liver oil and you're not taking a supplement and you live in a latitude where you are not getting direct sunlight most of the year, you can like safely assume it's something you should be paying attention to.
My fellow Canadians, everyone should right? be. I was talking to our nutrition scientist about that. And there's a misconception that like when it's sunny in the winter, that's adequate enough. And we're just so much further away from direct sunlight. And then obviously like wearing more clothes and those kinds of things all can contribute. So most Canadians should probably be making sure they're getting enough through their diet or supplements, because sunshine probably won't do the trick in the winter.
Yeah. And your doctor can very easily check your vitamin D. It's not expensive. Usually your insurance will actually cover it once a year. So highly recommend getting that checked. And then again, using chronometer just to see how much are you consuming from your diet? Probably not a ton. Mm-hmm. It's really difficult to get through food. So I love that. Magnesium, the one you brought up, is on this list as well. So magnesium is calming. It helps with anxiety and muscle tension. It helps you go to the bathroom so you're not constipated. Top food sources, pumpkin seeds, which most people, again, are not consuming, really prevalent in nuts and seeds. It's very difficult to get with food alone.
Pita bread, actually. My pita bread has a lot of magnesium.
No way.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Maybe it's fortified pita bread. I don't know. But it's always like my number one source when I make souvlaki or something. It's the pita.
That's awesome. I wonder if it's like being used as a dough conditioner or something.
I'll have to do some research into
call
that.
Call them up.
I should. Why does this have so much magnesium?
Like, thank you. And why?
Yes.
Yeah. Brilliant. That's fascinating. So last one's omega-3s. And omega-3s are my like favorite nutrient in the whole wide world. I think, I mean, they help protect our cell membranes. They can essentially treat anger. It's like one of my favorite studies that looked at omega-3s, anger, and anxiety, and found that by taking a couple grams of omega-3s a day, you can cut anger and anxiety in half, which is just wild. But you can get it from flax, chia, walnuts, salmon, herring, sardines. So a lot of my ADHD folks do not like to cook. Cooking requires a lot of frontal lobe function, right? Like, you have to plan to go to the store, get the ingredients, keep those ingredients fresh, prepare those ingredients, cook those ingredients, consume those ingredients before they go bad. That's a lot of frontal lobe work. If you have ADHD, you may not be doing that. You're like, give me the packaged things. And that's okay. We would talk with our folks, and people who would come to our practice often had mental health issues ranging from ADHD to profound depression. And so often when you're profoundly depressed, you don't have the energy to cook. So what we would explain to people is our job is to first get your brain these nutrients so that your brain chemistry will start to turn on again, right? Like, when you can make dopamine and serotonin and you have enough endorphins and antioxidants for your brain to work correctly, then you can start to think about going to the store. But yes, what we don't want is for you to take yourself out of the game immediately by going, not only am I completely nutrient deficient, but I'm not going to eat anything that is not like free trade, organic, completely unpackaged, unprocessed, vegan, pesticide free. Like, stop. Mm-hmm. Get the nutrients. Mm-hmm. Get them for a month. Let your brain start to work. And then over the rest of your lifetime, you can begin to care about those other things, which are important. But like, yes, you are a mammal, you have to survive, you need these nutrients. So oftentimes it would be things like, hey, will you eat sardines in a can? Great. Let's go. Like, let's get you some omega-3s and protein. They also have a ton of minerals. So like, let's start there. Mm-hmm. Eventually we'll get you cooking salmon once a week. Eventually we'll get you doing oatmeal with walnuts and flax and chia. And so I want to encourage people, if you're hearing this list and you're going, my God, of course, this like naturopathic doctor is telling me to cook more. Don't feel like that. Like, there's easy prepackaged ways you can do this stuff. I would have my clients would take like gummy B6, you know, I don't care. It's like whatever you need to give your body what it needs. And then we'll work on the ultimate source. Cause you also have to eat like a cup of garbanzo beans a day to get enough B6. I don't know if we talked about this, like a whole lot.
I'm laughing because I literally just found the most delicious, vitamin D gummies.
Love it.
I'm like, I will remember to eat these. They taste like candy. It's amazing.
It's like almost too good, right? You're like, this shouldn't taste this good.
I know. I was like, this honestly tastes like a 5-cent candy from 7-Eleven in my youth.
Right. So, and that's the thing. The supplement that will work is the one you will take.
Yes.
So many people buy like the ultimate supplement. They stick it in their cabinet. They never look at it again. Mm-hmm. And that is such a shame, because not only is it a waste of money, but like, it cannot make you healthier by being in your cabinet. Like, it has to get in your body. And if you're not going to take a pill and you just know that about yourself, then work around it. Yes. And do something, like, heaven forbid, you do something that's joyful, right? Mm-hmm. Like, take a gummy, like, you know, eat your calcium gummy at night, feel happy. Like, for real, come on, isn't life hard enough? So it's, if you're using Chronometer, you can very easily get to the end of the day and see what gaps you've got left. Which I'm sure, at least I feel like you and I probably both use it the same way, where it's like end of the day. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You kind of look and you're like, what am I low in?
That is exactly how I use it. I'm like, oh, I didn't get enough of this, then I'll supplement that. But I actually don't, like, I do get quite a bit through my diet, but the top up, I think, is key. And I think that's also saving money. You know, some people are just blindly taking supplements all the time. Because they did like some kind of quiz online or something, and they think that they're doing the right thing for themselves, and it's marketed that way to them, lo and behold, they actually, you know, do cook a lot, and then they're mm-hmm. hitting most of their targets just through food. And then it's like, you are spending X amount on a supplement when you're getting enough through your diet anyway. But
yeah, absolutely.
I love that you said, like, I don't know what quote you just used exactly, but it was along the lines of one of my favorite quotes. And that is, like, the best diet is the one that you'll actually stick to, in terms of, you know, like, have a diet that you're going to follow, that obviously is hitting targets, but is sustainable for you. And the same thing with any supplementation practice or that kind of thing. Like, that is why I know I don't want to swallow one of those, like, horse size pills. I just don't. So if I get a delicious gummy, shout out to Jameson, not sponsored, they're the ones with the delicious vitamin D gummies, I'll actually be like, oh, I want to take this every morning. This is delicious. Beyond those nutrients and obviously exercising, I'm a huge fan of exercising for stress relief, anxiety, all that kind of stuff. What other things are effective for ADHD? And I will say that we're obviously talking specifically about ADHD, but I feel like anybody that's listening, this could benefit the entire population. Focusing on activity, getting everything you need in your diet, even if you don't have ADHD, is going to serve you. So what are the other things people can incorporate that are also shown to help alleviate symptoms?
1,000,000%. Yeah. I want to echo that too. I think just like any condition, it was wild. So in my practice, we would look at everybody's chronometer analysis of their diet, and we would track long-term, and we would build them meal plans to get them to 100%. And pretty much everything got better.
Yes.
Like, it was really hard to find a single person who did not improve with that approach, because getting you enough nutrients is going to improve most things, again, because of our biochemistry being run using nutrients. So other things you can do if you have ADHD, let's talk to the parents for a second, because we quoted that like 8 to 11% in the US, World Health Organization thinks it's anywhere like from 2%, you know, up to that worldwide. That's in kids. Adults, it's estimated that about 60% of kids with ADHD will have it into adulthood. And again, if your kid has it, 60. Sorry,
is it something that people can, like, I don't want to say grow out of, but is it something that can fluctuate throughout life?
Or it is. Yeah, it's funny. That's an interesting question. So I think there's some debate about that.
Okay.
So we do know that about 40% of people will report that they don't have symptoms that meet the clinical criteria as an adult, even though they might have had a diagnosis as a kid.
Okay.
I'm curious about that data, because I think there are other people, maybe neuroscientists, who may argue that you're probably always predisposed and you may just be better managed at different parts of your life. And then there are people who feel that you certainly can grow out of it. So I'm not sure what the right answer is, but what I do know is that the research would suggest that about 60% of folks are still dealing with some level of symptoms that are impacting their life into adulthood. And we also know that if a kid with ADHD has a parent with ADHD, they're much more likely to have, I would say, less optimal clinical outcomes, which in plain English means they might have more symptoms and they might struggle a bit more. And that is all to say that parent training and mindfulness are two therapeutic approaches that you can use in a household with ADHD to really improve symptoms. So parent training just really involves the parents gaining new tools and a new approach for interacting with their kids who have ADHD. So instead of maybe saying, like, you need to get ready for school, if you're late for school, I'm giving you a consequence, like, and you feel like you're hounding your kid all the time, and your kid has a neurodevelopmental disorder that prevents them from really doing things like getting ready for school on time difficult. They teach you to do things like, say, if you get ready for school and you have 3 minutes to spare, you get this reward.
Right.
And then you back out. And so that's a very simple switch that I don't think is intuitive. Like, I wouldn't have thought to do that, right? Before I learned about this parent retraining stuff. That could be really helpful for parents who have kids with ADHD to learn those techniques and to model for their children. Because a lot of times what can happen with ADHD, especially when it goes undiagnosed for a long time, is that our kids with ADHD can internalize these ideas about themselves that they're lazy, they're disorganized, like all the criticisms that they get, right, from the outside world, from school, from parents who are not ill-meaning at all, but maybe who might have had the same struggles as a kid and been told that too. And so what we don't want is to give that message to children with ADHD. We want to equip them with a really strong internal environment that's full of positive communication, right? So like, okay, if I get ready early, then I can do this thing. That's mm-hmm. what we want them saying to themselves as adults. So really love parent retraining. I think it's a cool tool. Mindfulness does seem to help with ADHD. We know that having ADHD comes with increased perceived stress. So people who have ADHD tend to feel more stressed out. So like just learning mindfulness for that alone can be really helpful. It does also seem to help with symptoms. And mindfulness could be taking a whole MBSR course where you learn how to meditate and you learn what mindfulness is. It could also be just taking a break and going outside and looking at the stars or looking at the leaves and like taking a deep breath of fresh air, building in those moments in the day where you can just be present can be really helpful and grounding for people with ADHD, for everyone. Just
the way you said that, I feel like you could later as your side hustle, because clearly you don't have enough going on already, you could sell audio tapes of encouraging people to be present through looking at the stars or the leaves. That was very calming. I felt instantly calm when you said that.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I'm glad. I probably need to do more. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll do it at work. Everyone.
Yes.
Go outside.
Look at the leaves. The way they glisten in the sunlight.
Just be, man. Mm-hmm. I do think we have a very hustle culture.
I know. And it's celebrated. Although I think mm-hmm. that we are starting now, and I even see this with the wearables we integrate with, like Aura and Whoop and those kinds of companies are now like prioritizing rest, recovery, readiness. And I think mm-hmm. that like 4 a.m. grind, wake up at 4, work out for 3 hours, then go to work and then come home and do, like, I think that's kind of, we're starting to understand now that maybe the hustle is not necessarily the best practice for our physical and mental health. So.
Yeah, it was really cute. I don't, have you had Vincent Pedre on here yet? He wrote Gut Smart Protocol.
No, but.
We were chatting and I was like, what are your tips for being a high performer in hustle culture? And he just looked at me and he was like, why would you want to do that?
It's true though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, why do you want to hustle so bad? You know? And I thought that was such a cool response. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, go outside, man. Like go look at the trees. Which we need a reminder of that. Yes.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. You brought up Aura, that which made me think of biofeedback and neurofeedback. So we do know that those help folks with ADHD as well. One of the coolest things, and James Greenblatt is a psychiatrist who has amazing books on this subject. You guys should go follow him at psychiatryredefined.org. He's been treating ADHD using natural methods for like 30 years. One of the things he talked about was that they used to do neurofeedback a lot in the clinic for people with ADHD. And that's basically biofeedback for your brainwaves. Mm-hmm. So teaching people to control their brainwaves and the state that they're in, like theta state or, you know, whatever you want to induce. But they found actually that really high dose berries or proanthocyanidins, which is a part of the blueberry basically, or the really darkly colored blackberries and raspberries, taking that was as effective as doing neurofeedback.
I'm so glad I had a cup of blueberries at lunch. You've taught me so much today. My life is different after this hour.
ADHD people who are listening, keep blueberries on your desk. Like, you will eat them. My rule for my clients was, before you drink your first cup of coffee, as you are waiting for it to brew, consume a pint of blueberries. Like, just sit there, mm-hmm. you know, watch it, whatever else you're going to do. And if you leave them on your desk, you will eat it. right? Because we're all kind of good at that, like mindless eating. Great. Keep your berries on your desk and you'll like, you'll blow through them. But yeah, I mean, berries are amazing.
Amazing.
The berries will like slow cognitive decline. They're a medicine for sure.
Honestly. And they're so hydrating. Like we had a podcast episode on hydration and just learning about how much more hydrating fruits are than like a glass of water is startling. So I'm all about the berry life after Dr. Dana Cohen. Shout out. Shout out. She changed my life.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great. You want one more?
Well, I do have a couple more questions. One was on supplements and any herbal remedies.
You read my mind.
Yes, great.
In the treatment of ADHD.
Yes.
Let's go.
Okay.
Cool. So nootropics. Have you guys talked about this on the podcast?
No, but I follow Huberman, so I've heard a lot, but maybe we could educate people who have not and they're like, what did she just say?
Nootropics. Nootropic. Some people say nootropic. Some people say nootropic. Takeaway you guys need to have. They're generally herbs, sometimes just compounds, that help increase metabolic activity in the brain, usually by boosting blood flow. So we know that some of those really help with ADHD. And if you think about it, that kind of makes sense because in ADHD, generally the metabolic activity in your frontal lobe, that farthest part of your brain from your heart, so right behind your forehead, that doesn't have as much metabolic activity as somebody without ADHD. So when we boost blood flow and metabolic activity in the brain globally, it tends to help get more blood flow there. And just so you know why that matters, because blood flow kind of sounds boring. You're like, whatever, blood flow. Okay, who cares? Well, blood brings oxygen.
Yes.
And every single nutrient that your cells need to those cells. So like if you were to take all the blood out of your body, nothing would move.
No.
Like you can't bring oxygen to a cell. You can't bring vitamin D to a cell. You can't bring zinc to a cell. So you can eat the healthiest diet in the world. If your blood isn't moving correctly, you're not going to deliver those nutrients to the tissues that need them, particularly the tissues that are farthest from your heart. So if you are someone who's like super dehydrated and your fingers and toes are freezing cold and the tip of your nose is freezing cold, the farthest parts of your brain are also not getting a ton of blood flow if that's happening. And that's because your body will prioritize blood flow in your core to keep you alive. So it wants to keep your heart, you know, oxygenated. And anyway, so when we're boosting blood flow, we're bringing more nutrients, making you happier, you concentrate better. So things like ginseng and ginkgo biloba, there was a study that looked at those. And after just 2 weeks of taking those, people saw a 31 to 67% improvement in their ADHD symptoms. After 4 weeks, they saw a 44% improvement in social functioning and then a 74% improvement in their hyperactive and impulsive symptoms. So caveat with these, like guys, herbs are the original medicines. Like we make medicines from herbs. That's how we got pharmaceuticals. So like aspirin is from willow tree bark. You can take too much aspirin. Like you can also take too much willow tree bark. Do not take these plants without talking to your doctor. It is a bad idea. They can hurt you. They can also be really helpful for you and completely safe, but your doctor needs to tell you which. So ginseng and ginkgo are going to stimulate blood flow, and they can also interfere with the way certain like blood clotting medications work. So this is why I want you to have that conversation. Mm-hmm. But in general, they're pretty safe and they're plant-based. And that is like a really amazing study showing a ton of clinical improvement after just a few weeks. Pycnogenol or pine bark, maritime pine bark specifically, is another supplement. After about a month of supplementation, there was a statistically significant improvement in attention, visual motor coordination, and concentration in kids with ADHD. Now, dose makes the medicine. So with a lot of these herbs, you'll find them in compounds, but you should work with a naturopathic doctor, herbalist, functional medicine doctor to make sure you're actually taking enough and not too much. The amount that they used in this study was 1 mg/kg of body weight per day. That's very specific. It requires a calculation. Yes. You would need a doctor to do that calculation with you. But pycnogenol is pretty benign. Like there's not a ton of side effects from that. You can get it at most supplement stores. But again, another caveat here is when you choose an herbal medicine in particular, really any medicine, including gummies, by the way. I don't know if you just saw that study that came out about melatonin gummies, but like if you're not getting a pharmaceutical grade gummy, there could be anywhere from like 0.1 milligram to 13 milligrams in that gummy of melatonin. And it might say 1 milligram on the label. So you definitely want to work with a doctor who can give you the type of supplement that is really like regulated like a pharmaceutical. So we know that what's in the label is what's actually in the, the bottle or the pill. Same thing with herbs. You don't want to get herbs cheap. Like if you get herbs from a cheap source, they could be contaminated with mold. That could be really dangerous for you. Make sure you're choosing a really healthy source, and your doctor can help you with this if they're trained in herbal medicine. Another one of my favorite studies was a pilot study that looked at saffron. So they compared saffron to methylphenidate, which is a drug that we use to treat ADHD. And it seemed to be equivalent at the 6 week mark.
What is saffron? I've heard that recently. Saffron,
it's a spice. So it's used in a lot of like Indian cuisine. So you may recognize it from that. It's pretty expensive as a spice. So this study used 20 to 30 milligrams per day. So it was in a pill. If you were to use it as a spice, you probably wouldn't get to a clinically effective dose.
Right.
So you can use it as a spice. And I think in general, we know it helps to improve health because it's a spice. It's rich in antioxidants. It's good for you. But if you're going to use it as medicine, you'd probably have to work with it in pill form just to get enough. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Last one's Bacopa. I think Bacopa is in a lot of the nootropic formulas that we're familiar with these days. And it just boosts blood flow to the brain, like the rest of the nootropics. But it seemed that it reduced restlessness in 93% of the kids in one study who took it for several weeks, the kids who had ADHD. And that was 225 milligrams per day.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Your doctor will tell you like how much and what dose and all that. But I think it's important to mention these doses because a lot of people will just pick it up off the shelf and not even check the dose. Mm-hmm. Like that's not how you want to use these. You want to really ask your doctor to help you mimic the study as closely as possible. And that includes quality and dose. So those are just some examples of things that, you know, you can get in your food, right? And you can talk with the doctor about that aren't – they're not going to require a prescription. And they might be able to really help you improve your experience.
It sounds like, you know, in these trials that they are very effective. So once again, obviously, Dr. Kate has told us numerous times, but definitely work in conjunction with someone who is well-versed in these and has the appropriate education to be instructing you on these things. I feel like I've learned so much just in general, honestly. B6, tyrosine, dopamine. I'm going to be living. That one's going to be in my sleep tonight, which is one of many takeaways. I feel like anyone can benefit from this. We had someone on our podcast last year, Dr. Uma Naidu, and she was talking about, she's a nutritional psychiatrist, which is kind of along the same lines as what you're doing, addressing some different challenges with nutrition. And I'm just honestly riveted. I think it's so fascinating. At the end of the podcast, I always ask people for one piece of advice that our listeners can action today. My last podcast interview, Sam Miller was like, I have 10. I'm like, well, you can only choose one. So one piece of advice for a takeaway.
I think if any of this resonates with you, go have a conversation with your medical provider. Like if you haven't been diagnosed yet, and just see if this could be affecting you. Because we talked about some of the impacts that untreated ADHD can have on your life. And there are so many people I talk to in my practice, particularly women who came in when they were 40, 50, they had never been diagnosed with ADHD. They were just getting diagnosed for the first time because maybe their kid got diagnosed. And there was so much sadness for the years that they missed, the years that they struggled, the fact that they might have failed out of college, how much career struggle they'd had, how much emotional struggle they'd had, because they didn't know. And I don't want that to be anyone who's listening here. So if you think this could be true for you, talk with someone about it. And I'll put it in a second one just because I think, okay, maybe someone's not ready for that, or they're like, okay, this doesn't affect me in the same way Kate's saying, I don't need to talk to my doctor. Fine. If you're not using Chronometer, I don't know why you'd be listening to this podcast, but if you're not, use it like one day. I challenge you to log one day, look at the full report. And my advice to people is always don't just do it on your phone the first day. Do it on your computer, because I want you to literally see the full nutrition label all at once. I want you to see all the greens, all the grays, all the reds. Mm-hmm. Log one day and look at your results. And I, if you get 100% of every nutrient, you write to me and Elisa and you tell us. I'd send you a prize. I don't know what we'll do.
I
guarantee you, like, you are not getting enough. Your eyes will be opened. You will become someone who is actually curious about nutrition and your own health. And more importantly, you will become empowered to learn how to use nutrition to improve your health. Yeah. So I think that's my biggest.
Knowledge is power. And I think that, I mean, I've taken the journey. So I'm on the other end of where a lot of people are starting with this. And I totally appreciate, because I was a 16-year-old that was, you know, mowing down some nibs, and someone told me that they had too much fat in them. And that was the first time I ever heard about anything to do with nutrition. But there's so much to be learned that transcends calorie tracking, macro tracking. Like, you can eat as many calories as you feel that you want to. But I think that where the sweet spot is just making sure you're having enough nutrients, because being in a deficit for an extended period of time can wreak havoc on your health. And it did personally for me. That's probably why I track my nutrients more than anything else. But I cannot be alone. There's probably a ton of people that are missing out on things too. So this has been illuminating. I'm sure more people are going to want to hear what you have to say all of the time. So where can we find you on the World Wide Web?
So you can find my course that we're doing with Chronometer on this. If you're a medical professional, healthcare professional, a therapist, anybody with an NPI number in the US can take it. Anyone who's a healthcare provider anywhere in the world can take it. Go to rupauniversity.com. So it's just R-U-P-A university.com. Look under boot camps. You'll find the ADHD one. That's probably the best place to find me, because we're really trying hard to bring more of this education to the people who are on the front lines, who can use it to help folks thrive, because we really need it.
That's amazing. I will obviously put those in the show notes. Do you have any social channels you want people to follow you on, or are we strictly going to the website?
I would go to the website. If you want to follow me on social, you can, for sure. It's Dr. Kate Kresge. So it's just dr.kate, K-A-T-E, Kresge, K-R-E-S-G-E. And you can follow me there. But yeah, mostly I would say follow Rupa, because what's beautiful about the company I work at is that we have a full staff of full-time doctors who are creating content every day. So we not only have Rupa University, but we have a Rupa Health magazine. And so if you want to go look up an article, like, what are the root causes of ADHD? How do I test for nutrient deficiencies associated with ADHD symptoms? Like, we've got an article on it for you that was probably written by a doctor, definitely written by somebody, whether it was an RD. And I think those can be really valuable. And I used to have people write to me all the time to tell me how valuable they were. So while you can follow me, I would really encourage you guys to go look at the incredible team that we've got over there, who is just writing up resources for you every single day.
We will share those too. This has been illuminating, and your energy, as always, is incredibly infectious, probably because you're hitting all of your nutrient targets. You just have abundance of health and vitality. So amazing. Thank you so much for being here. And we'll definitely have to have you back. And I do recommend anyone who's listening to go check out Rupa Health, because obviously there's a ton of resources people can learn from. So Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
Even though I'm not personally diagnosed with ADHD, I still left this episode a lot more educated and interested in nutrition interventions and mental health. If you like this episode, make sure that you subscribe to Discovering Nutrition for future episodes, or if you think that this episode could benefit someone in your circle, please share it with them. Thanks so much. We'll see you next time.